All right, welcome into College Football with David Pollack. I'm your host, David Pollack, and like always, Brent Rollins joins us, and Brent writes for Rivals and PFF, and just knows a lot about football. And so it's kind of cool today, Brent, one of my old colleagues, a guy that I worked closely with for a long time too, and he has some really good stories. He's a good storyteller. He's very funny. His name's Dan Mullen. He just took the UNLV job, but he spent time with some great athletes, some great systems, some great quarterbacks with Dak and Tebow. And we'll ask some stories, Brent. He'll be good. He'll be funny. And I think the fun thing about Dan is he's just a goober. Like he's just, he's himself, which I absolutely love. And himself has been good enough to win a lot of flipping football games.
It has. He's done well. And it's, I mean, what was it? Maybe 2-3 year break, I think, from when he was last in Florida being in TV. And then now at UNLV, which is interesting because that's the place that most people probably think of when they think of that school, they think of basketball and they think of March Madness, but UNLV's actually struggled in basketball for a while. So, and the football team has, you know, had a really good year last year, almost made it to the college football playoff, and we'll see what he can do there. But speaking of basketball, did you watch much of the basketball over the past?
Oh yeah.
Four or five days.
It's impossible not to. My son's all dialed into the bracket. My wife is a diehard Duke fan now. So we're watching Duke, which is a strong contrast from
looking
what
good.
I used to be. I think you got used to growing up in the 80s and hating on Duke and 90s, actually 90s and 2000s. But yeah, the SEC obviously has been doing well. The Big Ten's done well, but a lot of playmaking. Do you see the Maryland? Do you see the end of the Maryland game? Did you discuss the travel, or non-travel?
I have that written down as a question for you. Did you think that was a travel? Because old man me, that's very much a travel.
Well, here's the thing, and here's what sucks about basketball. So if you know basketball or played and you've watched over the last several years, like they give you a gather step, and the gather step is when you're still in the process of dribbling or even remotely dribbling and you pick up the basketball, that step didn't count. So when you decide, here's the problem. We've done that. So it's a lot. Yeah, old school two steps, then you'd say it was three steps. But where did the gather step start? Like I listened to the they had the rules guy on there last night, one of the referees, and I thought it was interesting listening to him. And he was like, I really wouldn't call that. It's not really a walk because of the rules. And I'm like, really? Okay, well, it's not. But either way, that shot by the
awesome.
Big fella going left, fading away with a hand
using
in his
the backboard.
Face. Dude, that was a tough, tough shot. I want to know if he called bank, honestly. I think he did. It looked like he did.
Oh, he looked like he did that on purpose. Like, that was the beauty of it to me, was using the glass.
I bet Van Pelt was jacked up, knowing Van Pelt for all these years and the luck Maryland hasn't had. But how about the coach? I love what the coach said in the interview after the game for Maryland. He said, I got to the huddle before I drew up the play, and I said, who wants the ball? And he said, Coach, give me the mother effing ball. I'm like, all right, that's my guy. And I tell you, man, that's who you want shooting. It's guys that believe, guys that want the ball. And there's not a lot of those guys out there. And make or miss, you just know you make a good shot, you miss it. So what? You make a good shot and you make it? Awesome. But you got to be comfortable missing that. And the big fella was a baller. He had a good game, too. You could tell he's a freshman. Obviously, they got what do they call it? Crab five, right?
Yeah,
the Crab Five at Maryland, but young, they don't play a lot, but they're obviously a good dub and shot it well enough. And what else stuck out for you with the tourney?
It was very chalky. The SEC, that was the storyline all year, how dominant the SEC was, and then they get half the teams that were in the tournament, seven of the 16 in the Sweet 16. I think it was the first time since 07 I saw that there's no teams that are a double-digit seed in the Sweet 16. But that
makes a lot of sense to me, because all of those Cinderellas that used to have those guys that they developed, and those programs now they go in the transfer portal. Like that makes a ton of sense because, you know, you think about it, like you used to go and those guys used to stay and when the penalty was so severe for leaving and sitting out. But now if you're going to go from a school that you just developed you, now you can go get paid, play at a bigger stage, maybe make your NBA play, you know, dreams come true. You know, that's why there's so many transfers. And every time they're talking about somebody, it's like, where did he come from? He came from here. Oh, he came from here. He came from here. So I think you'll see less and less of those upsets that we love so much in college basketball because of it.
I had forgotten that Michigan had the guy that was on FAU a couple years ago.
Yeah. And the big boy center. Like, one of their 2 7 footers.
Yeah. I'd forgotten about that. I forgot the Caleb Love kid was now at Arizona. Like, yep. There's so many guys that are just still around. And also the NIL, I think, helps guys who maybe would have gone to the league and not cared if they were a second round pick or undrafted. They're staying. Yep. And you got older guys who are staying. So all that leads up to, all right, so who's winning the family bracket right now? Who's in first?
Lindsey Pollack.
Can you guess who was in first in the Rollins family bracket?
If I had to guess, I'd go with Cameron.
Breely. You think differently for this. It is 100% Breely, my daughter who's 14, who obviously doesn't watch any basketball whatsoever. She picked, you know, not as many upsets. And that's, she's in like the 70th percentile.
I didn't know if Breely went with her favorite colors, though. I didn't know if, I mean, she was,
possibly.
There's no telling with Breely of what she'll go with.
Yeah, very true. But no, I at least have my final four teams still left, but whatever. Next up, more interesting issues, local and unique to us where we live here outside of Athens, Georgia, is Georgia had a couple of players who are now suspended indefinitely, wide receiver Nitro Tuggle, offensive lineman Marcus Easley, for driving-related issues, speeding and or semi-racing, I guess, in a way. Not really, but maybe.
I feel like we could put this on repeat every like couple weeks or couple months.
It's becoming a thing. It's becoming a consistent thing. It is a thing. And it's like, what do you do? What's the solution?
There is no solution. I mean, here's what's happening now. The kids are getting fined, which is good. But if you don't know where we live really close to this, and there's this Athens loop and this loop 10, and it goes around the perimeter right here in the Athens area. And, I mean, from what I understand, I've heard a bunch of good stories now about how they'll basically time themselves going around the loop, which is extremely dangerous, not good, not smart. But, you know, back in the day, we didn't have these cars because we didn't have this money. So more money, more problems, right? Like, and so I think you've seen some of that. They haven't had a lot of off the field stuff besides the driving. And I can tell you this from talking to people at the school, plenty of speakers that have come in with lost loved ones. Plenty of cops that have come in, plenty of people that have told stories and, you know, stories that not rug story that's been told. And like, I mean, it's just, it's not sinking in. And I don't understand it, but I do understand it because I understand being young, dumb, and invincible. Like, I remember that feeling that I was untouchable. I was too scared to do this because, I mean, I just wouldn't have done it because of that. But I don't think there's anything you can do is fine, you know, kick them off the team, suspend them indefinitely. That's the kind of stuff you can do. And listen, that takes a paycheck away probably, you know, take some of that money away. And that's probably a start. But otherwise, I promise you, Kirby would have figured it out.
Because this is one that's maybe a little unique to you because I know you and you used to – lead foot maybe is the term a little bit in terms of that. And me personally, even too, I remember in high school, we go to Jackson, Ohio from where I lived, 4-lane road, by the way, cops all over this road. And us idiot high schoolers start, you know, going in there, racing a little bit on the 4-lane, coming back to watch from a JV game. And you like, you just do dumb things at that time frame. And I actually,
when did they say that going, frontal lobe develops like 26?
I mean, I don't know, but it was like, I do remember, I think at that point I hit triple digits and like hit a little bump and it kind of
scared the piss out of you.
And I was like, nope, we're done. Yeah.
Completely. We're done. At some point when you, and here's the thing too, though, like you want that scary moment, but man, they had it.
They had it.
The 2023 where a guy passed away, you know, in a wreck. And since that point, there's been two dozen driving instances. And it's just, man, it's impressively bad. Like it's a bad situation that needs to get handled somehow, some way. I don't know how you do it unless you like put some governors on these cars, you know, like, hey, we'll give you more money if you put a governor on your car and you can't go over 75 or 80.
It's one of those things where knowing Kirby Smart, you know that he's tried whatever possible things that exist to try outside of completely and utterly just, you know, being, what's the word I'm looking for? Zero tolerance policy of any incident whatsoever. Like you're gone outside of that. I don't know that I'm sure he's tried infinite number of things. So we'll see. Hopefully no more for their sake, but yeah, it's not good. Not good at all.
Not good.
All right. So Twitter fun here. First thing you think of, took you off the screen. Screwed that
That's
up.
That's fine.
Let's see if I can figure this out. There we go.
Attaboy.
What's the first college football moment that comes to your mind? We'll go up the road about an hour and 15 minutes to Clemson, South Carolina. First college football moment that comes to your mind when you see this. What was yours?
Woodrow Dantzler. Absolutely. I remember Woody. We had Rich Rod on not too long ago, and he mentioned it. And I'm like, so I had a neighbor, Randy and Randy Miller. Not a neighbor, but a best friend's growing up, their family, they were diehard Clemson fans. So the first ever game I went to was a Clemson game. And then getting recruited by Clemson was kind of surreal. But watching Woodrow Dantzler and being in Death Valley. And then as they've gone on, man, like Hunter Renfroe comes to mind. I mean, Christian Wilkins, the squat, the split. I mean, that comes to mind. Like, and then you've had so many big moments, man, with Clemson over the years with Deshaun and with, Trevor Lawrence and with Hopkins and Watkins and they've just Higgins and they've had so many big moments that there's a lot that goes with it. But the first one by far for me was Woodrow Dantzler dancing around making plays in Death Valley.
Multiple games, I think, where I remember him having 200 plus passing and 200 plus running.
Silly.
I did think for me it was the Renfroe, the Watson to Renfroe to win the championship and the reason that one specifically is because I remember where I was when I watched the game. I remember texting with you during the game and prior to the halftime show and something that we were texting about making it onto the commentary during the halftime show.
The number of plays, right?
Right.
Yeah, it was the number of plays in that game.
Stay the course, because I had written an article for one of the websites about previewing the game. But that was one I remember. Some other people went, like Georgia fans went to the Christmas Smith pick six in the 2021 game a little bit ago.
Ouch. What about your folks? What about your – I know one of your West Virginia people dropped a 70 burger on there, 100%. Yes.
Lots of West Virginia fans were jumping in there, the 70 burger in the Orange Bowl with Gino and like Clemson was getting ready to score was like 94 yard touchdown return off of a fumble right there. So yeah, that was a beatdown. That was one that was mentioned. Woody Hayes went nuts on a Clemson linebacker in the Gator Bowl in like 1978, I think it was. That was one that was mentioned. Kevin Butler 60 yard field goal for Georgia. And then there are a lot of recency type things. The Ohio State fumble or when I think was it Justin Ross? The fumble that wasn't a fumble.
That was such a trash call. Like that was, I remember, first of all, your first one, Renfroe, I was literally on the sidelines right next to that catch. And I remember Renfroe was so fun to watch. I mean,
yes.
That dude came into meetings with his receding hairline that was running backwards. The dude was yay big. He was tiny. Not overly athletic, obviously, could start and stop really well. That was obviously his superpower and catch everything. But just an unassuming guy that turned into an absolute baller in college football. But yeah, I remember the catch against Ohio State and fumble, and you're just like, how is that possible? Like, what are we doing here?
Some LSU fans put the Joe Burrow smoking a cigar after the championship game. That's what they remembered. And then a lot of South Carolina fans put pictures of Lenore Sellers or things related to Lenore Sellers because of what just happened
a year ago. That's what's so great about that post is that post allows you to take it wherever you want. And that's That's why college football fans are the best, because they're so petty, like, and so, you know, they're going to rib you. They're going to make fun of you. They're going to troll you. It's awesome. Like, I'll never forget a lot of the guys I worked with, man. Like, they had such thin skin on Twitter. Like, they would get so upset. And I'm like, why are you getting upset? Like, why are you letting somebody really ruin your day? First of all, nobody should be ruining your day. But
no.
But you're going to get – you say one thing about their team. And I learned, even when you pick against them, if you pick against them, that basically means you hate them. Like, that's what it equates to in your head, because the passion is so deep. And it's just like, how dare you not believe in us? Like, you don't believe in us? That's bull crap. Like, and it's just like when I started – when I picked against Georgia, the hatred, like – was real. I had friends that were Georgia fans that went to all the games that are like making snide comments. And I'm like, whoa, chill, bro. Like, this is a job. Yeah. I'm telling you who I think's going to win. I can be wrong. I'm not trashing Georgia. I just said they're going to lose. And guess what? We've done a lot of losing, and that happens. Now, when Georgia got really, really good, it was fun because you can pick them a lot because they won a lot.
Turned out well.
But that's the nature of college football fans, which is so fantastic. The pettiness, the rivalries, the pranks, the all those things, man. It's just a blast.
So next up, kind of looking at future, and it lends to what the conversation that we're about to have, in that the Group of Five still has a playoff spot. And Boise last year took massively advantage of it and got a bye. With winning the Mountain West and being what, the 3 seed, I think it was that they were. Yeah. And so who's that Group of Five team this year that you are, you know, champion or hanging your hat on to make the playoff?
Well,
Boise, by the way, no Genty, a lot of their offensive line's back, Madsen's back. So they're going to be in the conversation. So maybe who is it other than, right? They're the easy one. They're consistently there. Who outside of them do you point to?
And well, one maybe that's coming up here. Outside of them, why can't we
including them?
Yes. I mean, I think, okay, if you're going outside of Boise, I do think Boise is going to be very much in the mix, because they just, and we had Spencer Danielson on too. Like, I don't think he's going anywhere either. Just like Dillingham, like just the success, the youth, the ability to relate to players and the things they got going, the tradition that they have at Boise now. Yeah. Like they get to enjoy the transfer portal too, from a smaller level of all the other guys that get plucked to big levels, but then they get Fresno State's running back and bring him in, who's a 1,000-yard run. Like, that's, so they get to do that ahead of everybody else. They're first in line ahead of everybody else. And I think because their culture, they keep a lot of guys, just like Ashton Genty. They kept him somehow, some way, the year before when people were throwing seven-figure deals at him. So I think having the quarterback, the offensive lineback, the coach, they're in the mix. But the next, I'm going UNLV anyways, and it's not because Dan Mullen's coming on the show. It's because they were one game away from being in there last year. Yep. I mean, they could have won the play. They could have won the championship game against Boise and been in there. And you know, they get the Anthony Calderado kid. How do you say his name?
Calandre
from Virginia, and Dan Mullen can put up offensive points. Like, we'll probably ask him about Kirby Smart and wheel routes, right? Like, I mean, that's just a part of it. Like, he figures out what you don't cover, and he'll take advantage of it. And he's had some great ones. And I think, you know, bringing him in with the credibility he has, people are going to transfer to UNLV now. And, you know, that's a part of it. So I think UNLV and their schedule, like,
yeah,
not a lot on the schedule to be fearful of.
They go to Boise,
but they got to go at Boise in October.
So some others I wrote down, and we'll see if any of these 1, 2, 3, 4 jumps off the page at you. So Navy, who gets Blake Horvath back, plus majority of their team, I think, actually is coming back. James Madison, who, by the way, will likely have UNLV's former quarterback, at least for a few games. Sluka, he transferred there, Matthew Sluka kid. And then Memphis. And then lastly, Tulane. One of those, I think it's one of those four outside of Boise or UNLV.
To me, it would easily be Tulane. if not for they lost their quarterback and their running back like that. And again, that's they got a good quarterback. And what does he do? He's gone, right? Like he transfers out and then they lost their he goes to Duke and then they lose their starting running back who goes to Oregon.
Like,
yeah, I mean that's the part that but Tulane's been a really good program for a while now. And I trust them. Like they find guys, by the way, looking at Tulane and their quarterback spot, TJ Finley, I'm sorry, that made me laugh so hard. Like TJ Finley.
Sixth year, fifth team.
When I say that name, people probably go, well, LSU fans go, LSU started as a freshman, COVID. Auburn fans go, Auburn quarterback started the next year. Like, it's kind of crazy. He's played at LSU, Auburn, Texas State, Western Kentucky, and now he's at Tulane in six years in college football. So, been around the block. But the thing about Tulane I didn't like was Northwestern, Duke, and Ole Miss. Like, their schedule does not set up to be that team, I don't think, outside of it.
Speaking of pettiness, though, playing Duke and their former quarterback, Mensa, who comes to their place, that will be there'll be a whole lot of petty, a lot of fire, a lot of them fired up to take care of business in that
game. Who'd you pick out of that group, though?
I would actually probably go with Memphis because they only have one Power Four team on their schedule, and that's Arkansas.
Yep.
They happen to play well in that game, and they've just been consistently good. But I think it is going to be Boise UNLV. It's just whoever wins that game, whoever wins the conference, and maybe one beats one, and then the other they play each other again in the conference championship game, possibly as well. But
they were both close games last year, and they had Ginty. So take off Ginty, who was the only bona fide NFL guy on that roster on the rosters that are going to be a first round pick probably. It's going to be good games. Obviously, coaching change at UNLV with Dan.
Yeah, and by the way, you mentioned the transfers and these teams benefiting from the portal. You get guys who, like looking at UNLV's starting group and or two deep, senior, redshirt senior, transfer. They brought in, I think, 22 guys from Power Four programs from a year ago. Like you can get solid and get quick in a hurry, but you got to make it a team. And I think that's one thing I want to ask Coach Mullen.
Yeah, and the easy answer is always, okay, just bring in better guys. But the problem is when you bring in juniors and seniors like Brent's talking about, they're very set in their ways and they've done things a certain way. And so now getting them to come together, guys that maybe have lost and it was about them, guys that maybe have won in a system that was totally different and you're asking them to now learn Chinese as opposed to English, right? Like, and I think that's the thing about Dan that I think will be very successful is Dan does a really good job of making it stupid simple. And Dan will take whatever he has, and I think he'll use it. Like, he's not going to put a square peg in a round hole. And I think that's one of his offensive gifts. And we've seen it over the years with different styles and different guys. He has that ability to do that, which is why there's a good chance you can bet on UNLV being really good.
So let me ask you that before we get to coach's interview. What do you think is tougher then? The leadership or team building component of that with the way the portal works now, or just straight learning a playbook and execution?
Probably the leadership, because you're bringing in a bunch of new guys from different spots who might have had a different role, but you've probably like football on a big scale. It is football. Like it doesn't change a whole bunch, but the lingo is different, but you can put it in your brain to something else. But a lot of times these guys have not been coached like they're going to be coached. And Dan, coaching at the highest level of college football and being the head coach at Florida, and winning national championships as an assistant coach, like he knows exactly what he wants to do. And he's going to be able to explain that. And he's going to be able to tell you, this is what I want. And he's going to be able to try to go win with it. But the leadership thing is, man, it's kind of like the driving thing with Georgia. I can't get you to see it and feel it. A lot of times it's hard to get you to buy into it. And you got to believe in me really quickly. I got to get you to believe in me right now. Like if we want to go win, I need you on my side so I can start getting all the guys on my side. And there's usually a moment. Like when you have a new coach, there's got to be that moment where you go, okay, this dude's got it. Like because you're all sitting there going, what am I getting? Like I saw him on TV. I saw him at Florida. I saw him at Mississippi State. But like, what kind of dude is he? Does he want to be here? You know, like you're judging him as much as he's judging you as a player. And so I think the faster and Dan's got a good personality where hopefully he can do that. So,
speaking of, I'll let you introduce the next guest that's coming to the stage here. That would be Coach Dan Mullen.
Look at that dude right there. Just chilling. Look at that background, Coach. Goodness gracious. You got beautiful palm trees. Where are you at, Coach?
I'm in Vegas, baby. Vegas. I mean, I'm overlooking the strip. I can, from my office, I can see the Sphere. We got Kenny Chesney coming out to the Sphere this spring. You can see MGM Resorts behind me. The whole strip. It's a pretty sweet little gig out here.
Rough life, bro. What, have you played any golf down there out there yet?
You know, I got my place. We're going to get a place down in Southern Highlands, Southern Highlands Golf Club. If you haven't played it, one of the greatest clubs in the country, if not the world. I mean, it's one of my challenging course. They just had the big collegiate there with all the top college teams in the country playing. And but it's an awesome, awesome course. Challenging, fun, but you can go play it every day. That's my spot so far. But there's a bunch. We're in Vegas. There's a bunch of courses I still got to get out to go play.
There's a bunch of everything in Vegas. But here's one thing cool to know about Dan Mullen. A lot of people that when we text back and forth, it immediately goes, okay, here's your SID. Contact through the SID. Contact him. They'll get you involved or contact her. Dan was like, no. Just shoot it to me. I got this. Like, I can do this myself. Dan's the normal guy, right? Dan, you're just everybody's guy, man.
I don't know about that. I try my best.
The media career gone back to coaching now. How does that feel?
It's a lot of fun. You know what? I had such a great time. I mean, the time with, doing the Thursday night game with Matt Berry and Harry Lyles and then being with Matt and again on Saturday with Joey Galloway in studio. As you know, I mean, it's a fun deal. Great group of guys, great group of people to be around. I enjoyed my time with those guys. Had a lot of fun. But, and we were a great team. You know, Matt's got the TGL thing going. I'm watching all of that every week now. He's hooked up with that. But it's not like being in the locker room. It's not like being around the guys. There's just nothing in life like that. And that to me is what's different. That's what's special about it. That's what I'm really enjoying, having so much fun with.
So you think, Coach, there's anything that in your time away where it's like, okay, I've seen it, stepped away, learned some things, or maybe even with the TV and what you do there, but what's different now these 3 years later back at UNLV?
Well, I think there's so much different. I think just the game of football and the approach of kids has changed. And I think the approach of the head coach has to change. It's kind of one of those things. There's so much that's different. It was a lot easier for me being on the outside looking in, then you look at the guys, you look at like Coach Saban that's walked away. Some of the guys are just like, I'm not into today's world of college football. Being out of it and looking at it and all the changes with NIL, with transfer portal, with all that from the outside and saying, okay, I was able to say, these are things I have to accept as changes before I get back into coaching. And that would have been hard to do on an everyday, right? I mean, that's really hard to do. You're sitting there, player development, grinding, building a roster, building a program. You know, I mean, there's so many little things. Like, you look, it's used to be the program was most important, and then secondly was this year's team within the program. Now there's this year's team, right? I mean, 50% of almost everybody has almost a 50% turnover rate, on their roster every year. You know, you're sitting there. So how that, you have to take a different approach to the game when you're thinking that way. You know what I mean? In year five in the system, he's in pretty good shape. You know what I mean? Like you're how you're arranging practices, how you're doing things, how, you know, the responsibilities you give him on the field, the comfort he has to play with within the offense is very different. When you're looking at players that are 1-2, maybe a 3-year player every once in a while, it's a little bit harder of your approach and structure. And so I think being out has really helped me redefine what I'm looking for, how I want to run the program. I mean, listen, I'm still about player development. I'm still about how do we get guys better. but we've tweaked a lot of the little ways in which we do it and the little ways of how I run the program from how I used to, just to adapt to this new world.
So Davey and I were talking about it before you came on. What do you think is the hardest piece, the leadership sort of team building piece with all the NIL world, or just learning playbooks and bringing all these different guys who have seen a bunch of different things into your system?
Yes, if you go through the old school approach, yes, all of it. You think about it. I think the hardest thing for me right now is the second transfer portal window, which hasn't even hit yet. I'll see how I do after that one. Because you'd love to teach these kids, and you get into this grasp of, hey, let's make a 1-year commitment. How about just make a 1-year commitment? I don't know, like with you guys, I know David pretty well. David knows that. And our kids have been together a bunch doing sports. I'm always telling my kids this, if you're going to start something, you finish. And if you don't want to play next year, don't play next year. But, if you're going to start the season, we finish the season. And if moving forward, it's not something we want to go and continue to do, we'll look at that in the future. But you finish what you start. Well, I'd really love in college football if they can get this figured out. In January, get rid of this spring transfer portal window. In January, this is your team for 1 year. There's so many different benefits to it. I could take up a couple hours telling you all the benefits to it, of the educational benefits, the growth of the players, the development of the players, all of that. But just within a team, the team building's interesting. A lot of times, a lot more is on the coaches doing more activities. Used to be a lot of times, if you remember this in football, hey, the older guys are teaching the younger guys the culture. That's not always the case anymore, because you might not have a lot of older guys. And so our deal is going to be, we're teaching the culture to everybody in the program. If guys that are here that are returning that have been around, I took over a program right here that had great culture at it. We have our pro day going today, and went to all the NFL guys. And I said, hey, listen, I can't tell you about the players. I didn't coach them, but I can tell you this. We had more, all of them played in the bowl game. We had more coaches opt out of a bowl game here than players last year off of last year's staff. So, and I took over a program that has great culture. So I don't know much if the guys can play that well, but I know this. They're really good team guys. And I took over. So they must have be really good team guys to have the culture they left. But I think for us now, it's so much more on, you're doing your team building for this year's team, and you're getting older guys, younger, older, newer, old guys that have been around, new guys that are freshmen, older guys that are in their first year, younger guys that transferred in with a couple years left, team building to merge all of that together. We've gone under that approach. We'll see after spring, right? You have to come to grips that you might have a guy that's on your leadership committee walk out the door after spring practice right now. And that's what all the coaches, I think, you go to a coach, that doesn't compute, right? You're an old school guy. You're a captain leadership guy, and you're walking out after spring practice and we're getting ready to start summer conditioning. I had to come back in with hey, get ready for it. That's just the new norm. Let's just coach who's here. And
people get upset with that, Dan. But here's the thing. We're still giving kids a transfer portal window. We're just saying it's not after spring. It's not when I'm putting all of this work in. I'm developing in practice, and then I'm going into the next phase. We're not trying to inhibit kids from being able to transfer, but that window really cripples programs, that you lose great players in that window and stuff that you just went through all this stuff with.
It just teaches bad habits to kids. Just start when you finish. Make a one, listen, I'll give you the benefits. If you do that, you know what your roster looks like in January. It makes February signing day more valuable. That February signing day, more opportunities for high school kids, because you're going to sit and say, hey, I don't have to save scholarships for the spring transfer portal window. I'm filling up my roster right now. Sign the high school kids. We're going to coach and develop them. It allows you to start team building in January and know what your roster is going to look like. So there's so many different benefits to it, but that is what it is. I think it's really interesting. I have spent a lot of time with NFL, went back and reviewed a lot of NFL notes. When I was an offensive coordinator at Florida, I think I was in Florida a long time ago. I'm not going to go to the team to sell this person out, but and they probably might tell it to you in an interview, but anyway, I was with an old time veteran quarterback. And, you know, I went up and they're in their OTA, what do they call them? OTA, well, we have OTAs now, like OTAs and the spring practice, whatever their practice is. I'm visiting, watching, and we sat down. I said, and we're talking. I said, tell me about some team building. What are you doing as team building? And he looked and he said, well, I don't worry about it. I said, what do you mean? He said, because every day there's guys coming and going in this room. So once we get really close to making the 53-man roster, I'll start my team building activities because I'll know those are my teammates for the year. I had that in my notes. I went back and reviewed it. And I said, okay, what, you know, how are we going to structure the team building around, I guess, after that spring portal window, like when we start up in June, officially that'll be our team for the year. You know, we're not making cuts. Guys aren't going to the portal at that point. That's our team. Now, that seems like a quick window, and I really would like to do it before. So we've done a bunch of team building before, but I'll see how that plays out.
Well, you told me, I remember sitting in your office in Mississippi State, and I remember you talking about a team building exercise that you did with Dak Prescott. And I think I want you to tell the story because I think it was tug of war. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah. Always. Always.
Well, I want you to tell that story.
Our guys here learned that, the tug of war. The greatest tug of war story of all times. You know, if you know them. I mean, I'm at Florida. They got quarterback on quarterback going. Cam Newton against Tim Tebow. Okay. Anybody that knows David, you know, you guys know Tim well. He does not take losing very well. Okay. For being the greatest human being walking on the face of the earth today, he really does not take losing well. Right. And we're out there for the tug of war, and he would very rarely lose anything. And we're out there the one day, and Cam dragged him around that turf. He might get mad for me telling this story. I mean, the one rule is you don't let go of that rope. I don't care if you're getting dragged around, you just don't let go of the rope. And Cam was like kind of taunting and dragging. I mean, and I was like, I better get in the locker room afterwards because this could get ugly fast in the locker room. But, you know, you've always had that. Dak is one of the greatest. You do little team, like everything you do is there's a purpose, right? And you think of this, the tug of war, I think is one of the greatest ones. We go one-on-one on the rope, just on a tug of war. And, you know, I've got my strength coach looking at me. He's like, the purpose of this drill is what? So the purpose of the drill is you don't let go of the rope. No matter what happens, going good, hold the rope, keep dragging the guy around. Going bad. And start dragging back. And as long as you don't go let go of the rope, you always have a chance to win the game. We'll be in a game in the fourth quarter. It might feel like it's slipping away, but as long as we hold that rope, maybe we can get our feet back in the ground, start pulling. They're going to get tired, and we'll rip the rope out of their hands late. It's one of the greatest team-building things you can ever do. Like, it just is the guys, the edge it gets them is huge.
Did you know Cam was going to be as good as he was when you saw him that young?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He genetically just different. You know, I had him his first 2 years of college. And one of the things with a quarterback, he's so tall, right? And one of the things, if you're that tall and like big, you have long arms. So you're throwing motion. You got to tighten those up. So we work tightening him up a little bit with his throw motion. If you watch him in his career, you know, for a big guy, he learned to keep a tight, quick throwing motion because as a tall guy, you know, you got these long limbs going everywhere. It can be elongated. So I had him young in his career. He was learning, trying to figure things out. We had a fun time together. He and I had some, a bunch of probably funny little stories. But you knew he was always going to be a special, special player. The game made sense to him. He got it. He was just kind of really learning how to be a quarterback, not just a great an athlete. You know, I mean, he was – because he was so athletically gifted, he could always win with athleticism. He was always learning to be a great quarterback.
So speaking of quarterbacks, you've got two new ones and
yeah,
who come from different programs with Alex Orji and Calandria from Virginia. How are you feeling about your quarterback room and how are things going there?
really good. You know, I mean, they're a little different style guys in what they do, which I'm okay with how they are. Alex Orji's done a great job. We've worked on his throwing motion, of tweaking his throwing motion. Now, I mean, the benefit, you go walk on the field, and I mean, he's about 6'3 and a half, 245. You know, I mean, one of his
first legs off the bus
is the size of two of mine. Yeah, I mean, he looks. He's got all of that genetic skill, but we've tweaked his throw motion and really, you know, spend a lot of time on learning how to be a pocket passer, right? I mean, one of the harder things to do, how do you sit there and work on those fundamentals? Anthony, I remember calling his games when I was doing ESPN, a Thursday night game, got to watch him play live. And he is, you know, in today's game, he's one of the ultimate extend plays, quickness, eyes down the field, ridiculous arm talent, can make all the different throws from every different angle. But as a young guy, you know, he played really young. I mean, he played as a true freshman at Virginia. So, again, when you get into guys learning the position, is getting him to learn, hey, you know, it's okay to check the ball down. They pay guys a lot of money to check the ball down, right? You know, if you want to be, like, very rarely are you ever going to see a quarterback win any type of award without a 70% completion percentage. So every play doesn't have to be a touchdown. Every play doesn't have to be spectacular. There are things. I'll let you use your talent. You know, both those guys. I say, you know, a lot for me is I want you to use your talent to do spectacular things when the time's right. When it's not right, I wanted you to do the unspectacular things perfectly. And we're spending a lot of time on that. But both of them are picking things up fast. Both have great leadership. Kate Billy, it's going to be fun. We have our first practice this Thursday. So we'll get them out on the field and see when it starts moving faster, how that goes.
I think it's interesting because people listening, Dan, they're probably like, wait a minute. Why is it that hard to teach somebody to check the football down? Well, it's personalities. Like, you're dealing with personalities.
Wasn't there a TV commercial, chicks dig the long ball? Chicks dig, right?
Well, that's
chicks 100%. Dig the deep ball. They're not looking for the singles hitters. You know, I'm like, just hit some singles. Can't go broke taking a profit. Go 5 yards every time. They're like, no, I want the big deal.
Yeah. Everybody, but I think, do you point out a guy like Patrick Mahomes, like, who consistently gets the ball out of his hands, even though he does do those spectacular things?
That's the key. He's a great guy because you know what? They watch him do the spectacular plays. They want to watch the highlight reel. And I'm like, when you go study him, go watch when it's not there, how fast that ball's out of his hands on a check down. He very strategically, he'll hold the ball to try to take a shot or make something happen. But if it's very strategic in when he does it, it's not an every play deal. And I think for the guys, that's something they have to learn.
Yeah. What do you
usually a check down is minimally your third read in a lot of plays.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're looking at a lot of guys that have been taught, hey, 1-2 run, 1-2 take off. Like, you know, I mean, hey, you got to learn to get to 5 in the progression. Go 1-2-3-4-5, check it down, move on. Like, you know, I mean, that's you got to be able to process information at the quarterback position. That's, you know, if you want to see what separates great quarterbacks, if I lined up all my quarterbacks in one room, you'd say there's no way all of those guys played and had success for the same head coach, right? I mean, they're all different shapes and sizes and skill sets, but they all had the intangibles, and one of the intangibles is processing information. You know, how quickly can you process? You know, and that is such an important deal.
Well, and you talk about high school too, and you talk about like Cam and those guys. They didn't have to worry about it. They could go 1, maybe 2, take off and be like, and outrun everybody in the field and still score touchdowns.
They could,
like,
just go. I don't even need to get to 1. I'm just going to take off running.
Yeah, I mean, they absolutely could.
I remember a Cam Newton recruiting story. I went to see him. Tebow was a freshman. Everyone's freaking out. We have Tebow. He had a playoff game. I think he was at Westlake High School. So I go to watch him play a playoff game in Statesboro, Georgia. So I'm in all my Gator gear. So, you know, as you can imagine, that goes really well in Statesboro, Georgia. And I'm there, and they're like, hey, coach, what do you, you know, like, I mean, you got some good old Georgia boys, like, up down there. Like, why are you here? I'm like, well, our quarterback's committed to this. Like, you got Tebow. You don't need to. Who's this guy you're coming to see? I said, you'll see when he comes out of the locker room. And I was like three or four of the sheriffs on the sidelines. They walked by. I didn't think I was going to make it out of town. They looked at me like you got Tebow, and you like, what are you doing with him? I said, don't worry what we're doing with him. We'll be okay. So, but I mean, Tebow, I mean, like all those guys, you see, you know what? You can see different intangibles. Guys have the ability to win the bill, even in high school. Like everyone's like, hey, what's the number one trait you're looking for? I said, I want a winner. You know, I mean, there's no greater high school play I've seen than Tebow. If you've seen it, when he broke his leg in the third quarter of the game, hopping on one leg into the end zone as a high school junior, that guy's going to win. Dak Prescott's recruiting. He came to camp. He was 6'1". I couldn't help that he's grown, maybe 6'5". He was 205, and he ran 4.9, and he threw the ball like a helicopter. It was bad. And I'm like, okay, so he's not very tall. He's not very fast. He's not very big, and he's a below-average thrower.
That's my guy!
Everybody comes up, and he says, but he's the ultimate winner. I said, all right, we'll see. So we his story is funny. We sent him. He comes to the camp expecting it all. I'm like, hey, I need you to work on some things. He came back to our next, our big dog camp where we have all our top guys come in July, the one you do later on. Our strength coach comes running out of the weight room. We have all our top prospects there. He comes running up to me. He's like, offer that kid to be our quarterback right now. Offer him. He's our quarterback in the future. Offer him right now. I'm like, damn, I hope he throws a little better than last time was here. Because it doesn't matter. He goes, can't you teach? I said, yeah. It's like, well, teach him to do that. He's our quarterback. He's the guy. You know, it's those intangibles that make people special.
That's amazing. So, Coach, thinking about where you are now, where your feet are now at UNLV in Vegas, what do you see as the vision for what UNLV can be in the realm of college football overall?
Well, you know, as my wife said, like, hey, weren't we retired with this kind of good TV job, living at Reynolds in Lake Oconee, and, you know, she's like, and now we're packing up, moving the family to Las Vegas, and she's like, you've turned down a lot of jobs, you've gotten a lot of calls, why this one? And I just, you know what, again, looking at the makeup of today's college football world, I've always thought UNLV is a sleeping giant. I really have. You know, and you have a great city. You know, there's football talent here in the city of Las Vegas. It's a 4-hour drive to Phoenix, 3-hour drive to LA. You know, you can draw that circle where kids can get here, and you have a great recruiting area to go get players. You have a city that offers everything. And I was pretty fortunate. I came out here 2 years ago for the College Football Hall of Fame induction. And I think it was Tim was getting in. And I came over to the facility, and I was just blown away. I'm like, when I got to Florida, like, so 4 years ago, whenever I was at Florida, they have nothing like this. I mean, we blow them away out of the water facility-wise. So I was like, okay, hold on. We have facilities. We play in Allegiant Stadium with the Raiders. So I this place is just set up, and Barry Odom has come in and won double-digit games the last 2 years. We were, you know, a game away from getting a first-round bye in the college football playoff last year. I said, you know, I'm not walking into a place that needs a giant rebuild. I'm walking into a place that needs to take the next step. And there's a lot in place to make that happen. I think I'm a big fan. I love the city of Las Vegas. I think it's an awesome place, especially like a lot of people associate Vegas with the strip that's right behind me right there, that one little area. You get outside the 2.5 million people that live in this city. You know, it even still feels like a small town with a big city. Great people, great place to live. And so when you added it all up, you know, I told Matt, I said, like, I we're going to go. I think we can go win, compete for championships, can compete for spots in the college football playoff. I think we'll be able to attract really good players here, you know, in the new world of college football. And, you know, I think this is going to be a great place. You know, my kids, they, just for us, for the family to live, I think this is going to be a great place.
Well, if I know Megan, and that's not how she responded. She did not just say, okay, sure, Dan. I'm sure she had plenty to say.
How about little man with his hoops
and the family? What about the sports? Because I know he played football, but he went straight basketball, and you called me, you were finding a team for him. Everybody's good with it?
I was just back in. Well, you know, I mean, my son Kennedy, he's playing for the Atlanta Celtics right now. They just had their first tournament this week on the 2028 team. Man, that's still jaw dropping to me watching these freshmen and how they're all freshmen, right? And I mean, I gotta be careful, I guess, recruiting. I won't mention any names. I mentioned my own son's name, but these kids we're in games and they're alley-oop. They're freshmen in high school. I mean, there's alley-oop dunks. There's this. I mean, I'm like, wow, the athleticism of these kids. So, no, he loves being a Celtic and being out there. So, he'll figure that out. We'll figure the whole family situation out with him. There's great schools here in Las Vegas. I think some of his teammates on the Celtics are trying to convince him to kind of move into the city of Atlanta and go to one of the high schools with them. So we'll see how it all goes.
That means it's legit. That means he's a big time hooper.
Well, I don't know about that, but we'll see. He's got some more.
Piss out of it. How tall is he now?
He's 6'4", shooting guard. I'm a coach. Listen, if you want the hugs, you go to Megan. You know, after the game, the first thing she's going to tell you is how great and how amazing you are. The first thing I'm going to be like, I think you missed this pass here. I think you were off balance on this play. You could have finished that. I'm a coach. I'm trying to get better.
Have you learned how to toe that line better?
I'm trying. I really try. That's why Megan and I are a good team. You know. Like we'd have kids come off. She'd be at practice, come after the kids have practice. She'd be like, oh, you did great effort today. I saw you out there trying really hard. Like, you obviously missed him jumping off sides, didn't you? Like, you know, I mean, like, we're a very good balance that way with everybody.
Now, well, we appreciate your time, Coach. Best of luck at UNLV. The view, nobody's complaining about that view. Golly, that is not too shabby.
No, it's awesome. It's awesome. Hey, Vegas is a great place. I'm excited. We got some great kids on the team. Great program. University. The city's behind us. And, we're expecting big things this season. So we're going to have a lot of fun. I know you're not used to seeing me in red. That's what I get all the time, David, right? It's like, I had to change my wardrobe. How do I look in red?
Solid, brother. Red, red and black. I don't know that there's a better color. I just don't.
I mean,
I've had to rearrange my whole wardrobe. So we're scarlet and gray. It's not actually red. It's scarlet.
Okay.
Scarlet.
My bad.
Scarlet
my bad.
And gray.
Well, appreciate your time, Coach. Best of luck this year, brother.
Always great to be with you guys. Have a great day.